On Monday, March 28th, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed HB 1557, the notorious Don't Say Gay bill, into law. This bill is part of an unprecedented wave of legislation targeting queer and trans youth with potentially deadly consequences. And to put it bluntly, but in a very family-friendly way, that's not cool at all. At least through the month of April, because that's as far ahead as I've thought about this for right now. Me putting my money where my mouth is. Every bit of proceeds that Play Comics brings in, the Patreon money, anything from merch stores, anything that people just randomly decide to give me for whatever reason, is going to be going to Equality Florida. I don't have personal ties to the state of Florida, but so far, my home state hasn't decided to do something crazy like this, so I'm going to help out one who has. If you're one of those people that needs to get something in order to do charitable donation type stuff, Explain the X-Men has a program that they're doing. I have a link down in the show notes. I'm trying to future-proof this so that I can run this before every episode, and they can change their mind on things. So be sure to check out the show notes and follow the link there to see what kind of things you can get for donating. But really, this is the kind of thing you should be helping out, because it's something that just needs to get done, and not to get some kind of reward coming back your way in exchange for generosity. Because this is definitely not a time to just sit back and let things happen.
I'm SP from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a show about the general Marvel comic universe, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other hilarious and fun geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, where once again, I'm just going to forget about regular episodes. Who cares about video game things? Obviously not me, because I am talking to way too many creator people. Today, we are here talking to David Disson. I can't even say it right now. He just told me. Anyway, I'm talking to Marketing David from Vault.
Hello.
David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. It was a long but good day. Working on launching a few new series for our December window. And yeah, I had some good calls with creators today. I'm excited about what we have coming up.
Well, I'm assuming you're not going to be able to tell me who those are or what they are yet, but I'm pretty sure you can also assume that I'm going to be getting at least two of them. That tends to be how it goes with y'all.
Great. Well, thank you.
So I think the thing that most people have been wondering when I told them I was talking to you was, what exactly is your role over at Vault?
Yeah, so I kind of wear many hats over at Vault. My title is Director of Sales and Marketing for the direct market. That means that I am in charge of sales and marketing and publicity for everything that's related to comic shops. So I handle sort of like the serialization of, you know, our single issue series. I also handle things like Comixology and a lot of the digital comics marketplaces. I am in charge of the press side of things. So I'm the one who sends out, you know, like advanced review copies. I'm the one who sets up announcements and, you know, preview articles, interviews, coverage for the company as a whole. And I also sort of help shape the marketing tone for each book that we have. It's a lot of different things, really. Many hats.
So how has the recent change to using Simon & Schuster in addition to Diamond changed the way you're getting books into readers' hands?
So the change to Simon & Schuster is specifically for the book market. That means places like Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Books A Million or Indigo, if you're up in Canada. That is where those retailers can order our, specifically our trade paperback collections and our original graphic novels. Comic stores can also order from Simon & Schuster, but they can't order singles. Those have to come from Diamond. And yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Most of our singles, you know, are solicited through Diamond Comics distributors, who also have their own book market arm that's known as Diamond Book Distributors. And we were with them for a long time, but we really like the folks over at Simon & Schuster. They have an incredible, you know, reputation and track record of working with other comic book publishers. And yeah, we wanted to see what it was like to work with them, so we did.
So how long did y'all have that in the works before it switched over? Because I can't imagine, you know, that's an easy process.
No. It wasn't easy, but it wasn't difficult either. It's signing a contract, pretty much, and making sure that inventory gets to the right warehouse. I believe it started around sometime in 2020, during the COVID stuff. We were looking to make sure that we had the ability to get our books out to people who wanted them. Diamond had a pause for a while on distribution, if you remember, at the beginning of the quarantine when things really started to go south. And it was an option that we were just sort of exploring. And, you know, the more we talked with folks, the more we were interested in pursuing the relationship.
I've had a lot of people looking at what I'm getting, especially people who work at the comic shop somehow, where I kind of seem to have a finger on what's coming out better than they do. But what is the best way to find out about upcoming Vault books?
There's a number of different ways. If you want sort of like the cutting edge of things, if you're like a comics news reader, you know, if you go to sites like CBR or, you know, Bleeding Cool or whatnot, you know, a lot of our stuff tends to get announced at a lot of those sort of comic shop facing news outlets. But we also aggregate the vast majority of the cooler coverage that we get on our website, vaultcomics.com, where you can sort of, you know, see all of the new, you know, press pieces that come out, some of the key reviews, stuff like that. We have a bunch of pretty big, pretty exciting announcements coming up in the next couple of weeks that I wish I could talk about more, but you can definitely find them on our website when they happen.
Well, that's just not fair. Now you're teasing me. I don't like that. What about for smaller sites, you know, such as me, such as like Comics XF, WMQA, a bunch of people, smaller people like that. How would they be able to get in on having you feature their stuff when they review Vault books?
Oh, just send it over. I think you get our stuff, right? You're on our press list, if I remember correctly, aren't you?
I actually am not sure. I'm going to send an email over there when we're done with this just to make sure. Usually I end up seeing one of the creators saying something on Twitter and giving away copies, or Adrian doing it, and I just get everything from them.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's actually another good way of keeping up to date with what we're doing, is definitely follow us on socials, particularly follow Adrian, too. Adrian Wassel, our editor-in-chief, one of the co-founders of the company. He's incredibly active and very good on Twitter, and he's, you know, always doing fun things like sharing, you know, early looks at comics and stuff like that. But yeah, if you have any cool stuff, we're happy to put it on the website. You know, just send me a link, you know, if you have like a new podcast, and I think you've done this before in the past. But we just updated our website, as a matter of fact. We got a brand new shiny website. And so if you got a new interview or like a cool write-up or something, just send it along. I'll send it to the folks that manage our website for us.
Sweet. I know some people are going to be very happy with that.
Yeah. But yeah, I try to work with as many, you know, on the publicity side, I try to work with as many, you know, outlets as possible. I love, you know, ComicsXF. You know, they have been doing incredible work. Just really love what they're doing. And Dan over there too at WMQA. I think Dan's interviewing Danny Lore in the next week or so for Lunar Room, the sort of sci-fi werewolf noir series that Danny is writing that I'm incredibly excited for. You know, I love pretty much most comic websites, you know. I know it gets a bad rap sometimes, but I'm a religious Bleeding Cool reader. And, you know, Comics Beat, Heidi McDonald is a legend, of course. CBR, Newsarama, Chris Arendt over there at Newsarama is a good friend and a big ally of Vaults, and has very graciously given us a lot of coverage for sort of key announcements and whatnot. Yeah, I spend a good chunk of my day just keeping on top of comics news, really. Part of the job.
I mean, really, though, I think it really comes down to just the quality of the books y'all are putting out. But, I mean, Vault just kind of has a feel to it, I found, and other people have backed me up on this. What do you think it is that just makes something feel like a Vault book?
Yeah, that's, you know, credit goes to, I think, two places. One, obviously, is the creators who write the books. Yeah, they're the ones who are doing the incredible work. But it's also Adrian Wassel, our editor-in-chief, and Rebecca Taylor, aka Tay, who is also one of our editors. Tay runs our Wonderbound imprint, which is our middle grade readers and young adult readers imprint, but she also edits some of the series in our main Vault line. Like, she is the editor on Heavy and the Vampire the Masquerade series, Shadow Service, and a couple of other ones that are coming up. And it's really, I think, just their taste. One thing that they're very good at, and something that Adrian sort of baked into the company from the very beginning, was that Vault is specifically a genre-focused publisher, meaning that we exclusively publish books that are either science fiction, fantasy, or horror. And, you know, those are three sort of buckets that are pretty wide, right? Like, there are a lot of different kinds of science fiction and a lot of different kinds of fantasy and a lot of different kinds of horror. And sometimes you can blend, you know, all three together. But I think Adrian, one of his strengths when it comes to shaping the line is that he's very good at choosing books that are, you know, equal in quality, but also fill like a different sort of style, I guess. You know, like, our fantasy books, for example, not all of them are high fantasy. Some of them are, you know, kind of like paranormal, like Shadow Service, for example, is a good example of that, sort of spies meets the underworld. And then we have books like, you know, Songs for the Deaf, which is more of a traditional fantasy. You know, they're all really high quality books. The creators are telling incredible stories, you know, but they all sort of fit into a broader broader catalog, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely. It's kind of a running joke on here because some people don't believe me, but I at least have an idea brewing for something I want to get written. But every time I've looked, y'all aren't accepting submissions. So how do you even get new things over there if you're not accepting submissions? Because you guys are on my short list of where I'd want to get things published.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're not open for submissions. This is like a typical thing at publishers. It's not just at Vaults. One of the problems that can happen in publishing is a good example is, you know, I think Marvel, I may be mistaken, comics historians are going to yell at me for this, but I think it was Marvel where they accepted a submission somebody sent them a submission for a story, I don't know what it was, Spider-Man or whatever. And then they didn't, you know, accept it. And then, you know, a couple years later, maybe it was a decade, maybe it was even longer, they wrote a series that was similar, or like had a similar plot line to whatever that pitch was, and they got sued for it. And so that's something that publishers in general have to be concerned about. And I know Ross Ritchie from Boom has talked about this on his YouTube channel a good deal, is that accepting open submissions, or rather unsolicited submissions, can lead to sort of legal issues. So that's something that, you know, publishers have to kind of protect themselves from. So most of the time, and I don't know like how all publishers handle it, but I know the majority of them, you know, require being asked to pitch, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And so I think that's how Adrian does it. He's got his sort of like, you know, ear to the ground, as it were. One of the things that we do at Vault is try to break as many new creators as possible. If you look at our lineups, you know, since the beginning, we've worked with a lot of folks that did their first book with us, or, you know, only had one or two other books, and sort of help springboard them onto to bigger things. You know, you see that a lot already with, you know, the folks at White Noise, I think, is a good example. They had, I believe, all done books before doing them with Vault, but helping them sort of get on the map is a really nice perk of this position that we find ourselves in. So yeah, he's always trying to break new talent as well as work with established creators. And that's something that you kind of see in our lineup this year. We've got a bunch of new stuff coming, or rather new books from new creators, as well as stuff from established creators. Like, you know, in next month we have, you know, Cy Spurrier and Nate Gooden on The Rush, and we have another Rom V book, and, you know, and we've done stuff with the whole White Noise crew, sort of White Noise Round 2, and some of the bigger names. But yeah, that's always going to be sort of a part of what we do, is working with new creators and working with established ones.
I don't know if this is a question you can even answer, but what's the most anticipated book that you're putting out right now?
You mean ongoing ones, the ones that like have already had their first issue drop, or ones that are forthcoming?
Let's go both, because I'm curious.
So I think, let's see, for ones that have already started, Barbaric is, I think, the biggest one. But Money Shot also is an incredibly popular series. So one of the cool things about Money Shot is its readership has grown significantly over the course of the single issue series life. So we just got in numbers for, was it issue 12, I think it was. And the sales for issue number 12 were significantly higher than they were for even issue number 2. Which is pretty cool. So, like, readership has, you know, quadrupled, if not more, over the lifetime of the series, and that's something that's relatively rare. So we know that that book in particular has an exponentially growing audience, which is great. In terms of series that have not yet been released, I think the next three that we have are of all equal stature, I guess you could say. Maybe that's not the right word, but all have a ton of buzz and a lot of retailer engagement. And that's Human Remains, which is the book that we are doing with the legendary Peter Milligan and Sally Cantarino and Dear Blake Kelly. That's a horror story. I'm incredibly excited for that one. Peter Milligan, like, frankly, if it wasn't for his work, Vault might not even exist. You know, he's one of the original Vertigo writers. His work sort of shaped pretty much all of our tastes. So getting to work with him is unreal. It's an honor. And then we have The Rush, which is Cy Spurrier, who your listeners might know as being the writer on Way of X from X-Men, and had that legendary Hellblazer run that just unfortunately concluded too early, as well as Coda from Boom, which was a phenomenal book. He is doing he likes to call it a weird Northwestern horror story. So it's a sort of a blending of Western and horror, but it takes place up in the Northwest during the gold rush in the winter. And it's very creepy and very good. And that's got the art is by Nathan Gooden, who drew Barbaric. That guy is a machine. He can do multiple series at once. At one point, he was drawing Vampire the Masquerade and Barbaric and The Rush all at the same time and never missed a deadline. And then the third, I think, likely to be maybe our biggest of the year is Radio Apocalypse by Ram V and Anand RK, who did Blue and Green over at Image, which won a bunch of awards and was a pick for one of the best books of last year. And I'm incredibly excited for that one. I love both of those guys and their work. It's just, you know, out of this world. So I would say those are probably the three hottest books that we have upcoming, and they're coming one right after the other, which is pretty fun. And then after that, we've got a whole host of new books that haven't yet been announced.
Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't read Blue and Green, it's really good.
Yeah, so it's a phenomenal piece of work. Absolutely.
Honestly, I wouldn't have even had to listen to you tell me what that one from Ram is about, because the fact that he's doing something with y'all, like, I don't care, I'm gonna buy it.
Well, thank you, I appreciate that, and I'm sure he'd say thanks as well.
So one thing I've noticed from y'all is that you have a lot of limited run titles. What's the pros and cons there of working on those versus longer ongoings?
It's kind of hard to say, because each book really does have its own sort of sales life and sales trajectory. And so, you know, some of our miniseries do incredibly well throughout the entire lifetime, you know, all the way up through the trade. Some of them peter out relatively, not quickly, but, you know, you get a lot of people that come in for the first issue and then wait for the trade. Our ongoings are, it's sort of, it's hard to say. Like, Wasted Space is our longest ongoing. You know, that's about to wrap up at issue number 25, I think, in a couple months. But that was always the place that we were going to end it. It had nothing to do with sales. Mike Morisi and Hayden Sherman had a story up until 25 and knew what the ending was out of the gate. And Money Shot is another one of our ongoing ones. I think readers tend to like ongoings, or rather perhaps it's would rather or perhaps more easy to convert themselves to subscribers if it's an ongoing, if it's something that they know is coming every single month, you know, for a few years or something like that. I think that perhaps some folks are kind of trained to wait for the trade for miniseries, but I think Vaults has kind of proven ourselves to be the exception to the rule on that front, where, you know, we've done so many limited series, and they're not all mini series either. Some of them are, I guess you could call them maxi series, like Engine Ward, which was always a planned 12 issues, Blue Flame, which was always a planned 10 issues with a definite end. It kind of depends on the book, really. It's hard to make a rule out of these things. They're all pretty unique and sort of live different lives in the market.
So how did they get you working over there in the first place?
I'd been working in the comics industry for a while. I was a retailer at first. I used to help manage a store in San Francisco, Mission Comics and Art. Still love that place with all of my heart. One of the best stores here in the Bay. And from there, I started working at Magnetic Press, who is an incredible publisher that translates a lot of international work. And then from there, I went over to Oni Press and was there for a few years. And that was a lot of fun. And it was, I think, more or less just my experience, you know, knowing the ropes when it came to both the publicity side and the sales side. I had a mutual friend with the brothers, a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Atkins, who is a phenomenal human being who does a lot of publicity work in comics. I believe he's at Z2 Comics right now, but he was sort of consulting with Vaults when they launched at the very beginning. They were really good friends. And I knew Jeremy, and we were just chatting one day, and he mentioned that he was leaving for a full-time job, but he wanted to make sure that the Vault guys, the Vault brothers, were sort of left in good hands, which I was, you know, very humbled that he thought that I was, you know, that I qualified for good hands. And he introduced me to them on a call. And gave me the preface, the warning that I've told the brothers about this. He's like, just so you know, the brothers are intimidatingly intelligent, so don't get too scared when you talk to them. He's like, okay, cool, thanks for the heads up. And he was not wrong. Both of those guys, Adrian and Damian, are two of the smartest people I've ever met in my entire life, you know, both in and outside of comics. And it was through Jeremy that I got the job. And so I was helping them with publicity at the beginning, you know, getting things announced, getting previews and interviews organized. And then my experience as a retailer and my experience sort of like selling to retailers sort of brought me on gradually in a larger and larger role on the sales side. And that's how I sort of ended up doing both things at the same time.
Is that a common thing, or are you just kind of a unicorn who can handle a lot of hats at once?
I don't know, actually. I know there are a lot of really killer, brilliant people in comics that can do a lot of things. I don't know. I imagine I'm not the only one. Comics business is relatively small, you know, so I think even people who, you know it's the sales side of things are connected with the, you know, the a lot of the press outlets, you know, like yourself out there. I can't really say. That's just my experience. That's just how I ended up doing it.
So what is something about your job that usually surprises people when they hear it?
Ooh, I don't know. Most people that I talk to about my job don't know anything about comics. So they're like, wait, comics are still a thing? I don't know, really. I think it might just be the sheer scale of the effort that has to go into this endeavor, you know, publishing comics. It's a lot of work. And, you know, it's not just enough to just, you know, print a book and try to get it into a couple stores. There's, you know, if you want a book to succeed, there's a lot of different things that go into it. I like to say it's kind of an ecosystem of things. There's no like recipe for success. It's like multiple different recipes that you have to be cooking at the same time.
Are you telling me that I can't just slap speech bubbles on some Polaroids and have a successful comic?
Thought? Yeah, it turns out you got to do other things too. Who'd have thought?
Oh man, we'd have some work cut out for me now. What's probably the most fun thing about your job besides getting to read all the comics before everyone else?
Ooh, that is a pretty big perk, I gotta say.
That's why I cut it out.
The thing I love the most about the job is working with the creators and getting to chat with them. We're pretty hands-on at Vault, meaning we sort of bring the creators into the process of sales and marketing and publicity. And, you know, we don't just do anything, excuse me, without their permission. We, you know, they're involved at every step of the way. So getting to sort of be a part of their book coming to life is an honor, honestly. And I'm very lucky to be where I am working with them. But the coolest thing is getting to see like new pages come in. We use Slack here at Vault, every book has its own channel, and you get to see, you know, the pencils come in, you get to see the inks come in, you get to see the colors come in, the lettering passes, you know, see the conversations happen. It's just a beautiful, wonderful thing. And every day it just reminds me why I love comics so much.
So I have to imagine that you at least kind of halfway-ish want to make a comic if you're working there and have that much passion for it. Which part of the book would you do?
Yeah, I've thought about it. I like to say, you know, I've worked with so many incredible creators that I sort of know what it takes, not to tell a story, but like sort of what it means to tell a good story, if that makes sense. Like, I would probably be on the writer's side. I can't really draw to save my life. But I know that what I have are, you know, ideas, not stories. There's a difference between the two. But honestly, like, I didn't get into this job as like a sort of a backdoor into, you know, making my own comics. Like, I legitimately actually love the business side of things. I love, you know, being in the position that I'm in and working in comics and the way that I work in them. So I think maybe eventually I'll try my hand at like writing something, but it's not really at the top of my mind, honestly. I am, you know, more of a business-minded guy, for better or for worse. And, you know, that's where I really enjoy myself. But yeah, eventually, you know, it's something I would like to do. But if I ever did write a story, and if it ended up being, you know, decent, I'd probably, you know, publish it under a different name, a pseudonym or something like that. I probably wouldn't use my name.
Plausible deniability. I mean, I understand.
Yeah, exactly.
So what can people like me do to get on your bad side?
What do you mean?
Like, what can I do to get on marketing's bad side and have y'all decide you're never gonna deal with me ever again?
I mean, not that much, honestly. If you were like a dick about something, maybe. That rarely ever happens. I don't know if it ever has happened. Yeah, honestly, like, as long as anybody's, you know, like, relatively respectful, not too demanding, and respectful of, you know, mine and the creator's time, really, that's all it needs. I think, like, being a, like, you know, just being an asshole, I think, is really the only way to get us to stop working it with you. Maybe if you just, yeah. It hasn't really happened yet, so.
All right, then my next review is going to have a picture from page 8.
You're fired. No more review copies
for
you.
I can't believe it. But seriously, though, I feel like a lot of the reason why the people that I've talked to love Vault is whoever it is passing out the review copies, I mean, they don't really care who they're giving it to. They're giving it to people who want to see it because they know that that's going to get the name out there and get people talking about it. So I'm going to say that's all your idea.
Partially, yeah. I mean, it's, everything at Vault is sort of a team effort. You know, nothing happens without sort of everyone putting in their 2 cents. That's one of the benefits of being a relatively small publisher. It's like we can be incredibly nimble and get an idea through pretty quickly. We don't have to wait for, you know, some giant corporate, you know, overseeing entity like, you know, Warner Brothers or Disney breathing down our back. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, look, all these comics are going to get pirated eventually, you know, like worrying about it and sort of trying to protect things at the cost of a book, you know, generating buzz for itself, a book, you know, like creating conversation, you know, ahead of its release, you know, that's all things that you want. And to sort of shoot yourself in the foot by being too protective with ARCs that are going to just end up being pirated anyway, it's just, I think, kind of a fool's errand. Like, we don't really mind sending it out to people early in advance. You know, we try to make sure it ends up in the hands of, you know, respectful folks. But at the end of the day, you know, we don't have too much control over it. This is what we'd honestly just rather people talking about a book. You know, the piracy in comics conversation has happened, you know, so many times throughout the lifetime of this industry. And it's just, it is what it is. The books are going to get out there. There's no way that you can shut down an infinite series of mirror websites, you know, on Longbox Graveyard or whatever the hell they're called now. It's better just to have people, you know, talking about a book. It really is.
Well, we're definitely not going to have the piracy conversation now, except to say that if you guys want people to keep making things, they have to get paid, or they're going to spend all their time working at a different job.
Yeah, There was a really interesting thing, not to go too deep into the piracy rabbit hole, but I don't know if you ever read this, but when Casanova was being serialized, the book by Matt Fraction and Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon, there was some incredible back matter, and they did a poll in one of them that was talking about how essentially asked, like, do you read pirated comics? Like, do you buy comics? If you read a pirated comic, will you buy the singles? If you read a pirated comic, will you buy the trade? You know, and the numbers were I can't say conclusive, because, you know, it's a self-selecting audience. I don't think that qualifies as sort of statistically relevant. But I think at the end of the day, like, if somebody reads, you know, something that's pirated and they really love it, you know, they're going to buy the collection. You know, if one thing has proven that true, it's the manga market, you know. But we don't have to go into the nitty gritties of all that.
Oh, I'll make a whole separate bonus episode for that. It's going to happen eventually. It's already happened on the video game side of things.
Cool.
So if somebody wants to get in touch with one of the creators, would you say it's better to try to go to the creator or to go through somebody in your position, at least at Vault specifically?
It depends on what you're looking for them. Are you talking about for like an interview or something like that?
Yeah, let's roll with that.
It really depends. You can, you know, if you follow them on Twitter and if you guys have a relationship, by all means, reach out to them, see if they're interested. If you think it would be easier to go through me, you can do that too. I can check with them. I don't dictate anything to the creators. You know, I respect their time. So if, you know, I say, hey, like, I have a podcast interview for you, and they come back and saying, hey, I just don't have the time to do it, then, you know, I can't force it to happen. But yeah, either one. Either one would work.
It's okay. We don't have to tell people that you will make them go talk to me.
Yeah.
What's something that you wish people would ask about you or Vault or your position that just people never seem to get around to asking?
That's an interesting question. Not entirely sure. I think that my job is so inside baseball that there's a lot to it that, you know, the average reader, you know, who just goes into the comic shop on Wednesdays or Saturdays or whatever to pick up their, you know, the new few issues that they're reading, probably like won't know or won't care about. You know, I think the vast majority of people who read comics don't give a crap about the you know, the behind the scenes of it all. So I don't really know. I always feel that, like, it would be boring to anybody that doesn't care about about the industry stuff. just a lot of work. I think there's definitely something, there's a trend, and I've talked to other folks in the industry who have similar positions to mine in terms of sort of job duties, is that I would like some, how do I say this, like, I think a lot of times folks take the sales and marketing role for granted. Luckily, like, that's honestly never really happened to me. Every creator, even at other publishers that I work with, have been, like, so nice and kind and, you know, understanding, and also, like, seasoned and have a good sense of what the industry is and how it works. But I've heard horror stories from other people about folks just not quite understanding. And when I say folks, I mean some, you know, creators or people on the, you know, like the business end of things, not sort of fully understanding what the job entails or how much work goes into it, and taking it for granted. And so I definitely say that, you know, like, if you're a creator and you have a book at a publisher, you know, just be kind to the people that are doing the sales and marketing and publicity for your book. But like I said, I do want to reiterate that that's literally not true for anybody at Vault. Every single one that I've ever worked with has been, you know, phenomenal. But just looking out for all my other sales and marketing friends out there.
So what's up with the logo changes over there? Because, like, I was looking, it seems like the past few years you guys, I guess, get tired of looking at it and make a new one. And the new one is also amazing.
Yeah, shout out to Tim Daniel. He's our VP of branding and design. He is the sort of visual mastermind behind the entire Vault line. He designs every book logo, every, you know, Vault logo, the websites, every sort of Indicia page, every every non-story page of a Vault book comes from that man's head and fingers. Yeah, trying out new things, I think. We've landed on one that we, I think, all really like. Tim just loves to design things, and he's so freaking good at it. So if he comes up with a logo, I'm like, all right, sure. But I think the one that we have now is pretty confident in saying that's the one that you'll be seeing for a very long time.
Well, it's a really good one, plus really versatile with throwing on whatever I want to throw it on.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. I'll pass your kind words along to Tim. I'm sure he'll appreciate it.
So as we kind of wind things down, a couple lighter questions. First off, who was your favorite Muppet?
Ooh, either Animal, because I play drums and he's hilarious. Beaker, I think, just because he's so ridiculous. I always tend to gravitate towards the weird and wild characters. So I'd have to say either of those two probably is my favorite.
I think you are the first person to say Beaker, which surprises me.
Yeah. Well, and I feel bad. I'm forgetting his partner's name.
Well, Bunsen's not as good as anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Bunsen, yeah. But like the two of them together, you know, the straight man and the weirdo, they're just such a good bit together. Both my girlfriend and would kill me because she loves the Muppets and I can't remember the name. The older guys who are like always up on the side, yes, and they're always just talking smack about whatever's going on around them. Those guys are hilarious too.
So who would be your dream drum battle for Animal?
Oh man, well there's always already that great Dave Grohl versus Animal one that was really funny. I love Dave Grohl.
Well, anybody who doesn't love Dave Grohl is a liar.
Yeah, I just want him to be my best friend. He just seems like such a cool dude.
I know.
Maybe it would never happen, but it would be hilarious if it did. My favorite drummer, probably, his name is Danny Carey, plays in Tool, among other projects. And I would say, for my money, he's easily the best drummer on the planet. Has seen the two of them, Animal and Danny Carey, have a drum battle would be hilarious.
Oh, that would be insane in all the best ways. And finally, what is the most ridiculous thing you believed as a kid?
Ooh, man. I mean, there's always like the Santa Claus thing, right? Pretty ridiculous notion. Yeah, it seems like such a cop-out to say that. I'm trying to think back to like what did I believe? I'm sure there were plenty of them, but I honestly just can't think of an instance of something that I, you know, something absurd that I believed in, like truly believed in. I'd have to go with the Santa Claus thing, even though, like I said, I think it's a cop-out, but it's the only one I can think of at the moment.
Okay, well, we can't end on a cop-out because that's just dumb. What's your everyday superpower?
What do you mean?
Like your super normal everyday thing that you just happen to be really, really ridiculously good at. Like I was really good at finding parking places in college. Nobody else could do it.
Actually, I had a similar experience with that when I was, you know, first driving to finding a parking spot everywhere. Let's see. I don't know if it would qualify as every day, but I love to play Magic the Gathering, and I think I'm pretty damn good at it. And I would school anybody here listening. That's not true. It's half a game of chance. But probably that. I think I'm pretty decent at selling comics too. That is why I'm here after all.
As a recovering Magic player, yeah, that totally counts.
Yeah, I love that game. But yeah, I'd say either selling comics or playing Magic.
Well, now I just want you to come over and be my friend too, and then we can get Dave Grohl and we can just have a party.
Hell yeah, teach him how to play Commander and Magic or something like that.
Oh yes, get my Sapperlim deck back together.
Yeah, do it.
Swing for like 200 every turn.
There's a pretty big subsection of the comics creator and comics business community that plays Magic. If conventions ever happen again, I want to organize like a big Commander night, either like before the convention or maybe like the day after or something like that.
I stopped playing partly because I don't have money to do it, and if I start playing again, I'm not going to buy as many comics.
Yep. Yeah, honestly, I rarely buy new cards anymore. Every once in a while, I will, like, if I'm building a new Commander deck. I have a bunch of friends who are super into it, so whenever I'm hanging out with them, I inevitably get dragged back into the money pit. but I try, you know, to be responsible when it comes to spending on Magic. But I will do things like, you know, the pre-releases when a new set comes out, you know, or at least before COVID, I'd go to my little local game shop here in the Bay Area and play there. I might actually go do one, I think it's in 2 weeks they're doing a new set release, and I have a friend of mine from out of town that's coming in, so we might actually go do the pre-release because it's happening while he's here.
I'm refusing to pay attention so I don't get sucked back into it.
fair. All right, we can move on from Magic.
But David, it has been great talking to you about all this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. Let's see, I try not to go on Twitter too much, or Facebook, really social media in general.
That's
but you can hit me up on. Yeah, it can
despite
be a hellhole. Yeah, no, we actually have somebody else who manages our social media accounts. Thank God, so I'm not the one who has to to be on it 24/7. But yeah, you can find me at DW Dysoniaca. You can just look up my name and the spelling for the show. I know it's a complicated one. And yeah, you can hit me up on Twitter. I check it, you know, maybe once a day, once every other day, something like that. I took it off my phone, so I only go to it when I'm sitting down on my laptop, which I think is a healthier way of doing it.
Well, then what do you do when you go to the bathroom? You don't
hang
have
out,
to answer
enjoy
that.
My few moments of quiet solitude.
Gosh, I wish people would do that more. But as always, we will have links down in the show notes, because that's so much easier than trying to spell things, even on a normal day.
Yeah, especially my last name.
And as always, if you want to hear more from me, you can head on over to playcomics.com, where there's links to all the fun social media stuff, mostly hanging out on Twitter right now. We'll see what Elon does with it. I have no idea. If you want to help support the show, you can also head on over to playcomics.com, where you can, you know, just throw some money at the show, help keep the lights on, be like the cool patrons that I do have. You know, it's a fun time. Or you can just shove the podcast into somebody else's ear holes, hopefully get their consent first, or at least yell out a warning, because sudden loud noises are not very much fun. Don't forget that Play Comics is a part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to a bunch of other wonderfully geeky shows. But I kind of biasly think that Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the best, because they let me come on all the time and talk about things. Like right now, where we're talking about the Moon Knight series. And we've sucked in Anthony Sitko from Capes on the Couch. He kind of likes Moon Knight, just a little bit. We twisted his arm to get him to come on. If you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character.